Okay, welcome to this talk on a survey of NLP algorithms. This is a set of nonlinear programming algorithms for continuous variable optimization with an emphasis on getting only local solutions and expecting to have smooth first and second derivatives. In slide two, I have an outline of the talk that will talk about the problem and the goals. Then I'm going to talk about the Kuhn-Tucker conditions and classification of the variables derived from these conditions. In particular, I'm going to classify three kinds of variables: basic, non-basic, and super basic, and then talk about how algorithms are constructed around these three types of variables. Then we're going to talk about global convergence for these methods. We'll talk about what algorithms and software have been developed as a result of these approaches. I'm going to then give you a brief algorithmic comparison to show you what is a good idea and what is not so good and how these algorithms actually work in comparison to each other. And then I'll summarize and present some ideas for future work. Slide three gives the basic problem for nonlinear programming. And I've written it this way, where I've separated out the inequality constraints, g of x less than or equal to 0, equality constraints, and then of course there's the objective function. Now, with these variables here, one could also write it slightly differently. But to just recap what we know, we're going to expect that if f of x is convex, g of x is convex, and h of x is linear, then we have a convex problem for which a local solution is a global solution. However, if these conditions are not satisfied, then there's no guarantee that we have a global solution once we have a local solution. And unless we have additional information, that's basically all we know. Okay. Now, in fact, whenever we have a problem with nonlinear equations, then those conditions are violated, and we would not expect to find or to guarantee global solutions with this problem. Now, let's take a closer look at this problem, because what I'm going to do is simply rewrite this problem by adding slack variables, redefining the variables x to include s, so we have z, and now I have an equality constraint problem with upper and lower bounds on z. Now, I'm going to use this mainly because what I want to do is I want to partition the variables z into three kinds. The first kind is to have basic variables or dependent variables. These are the variables that are used to satisfy only the equality constraints. We have non-basic variables. These are variables that are going to be fixed at their bounds at the optimum. And then the super basic variables, or the independent variables, are what is left over. Okay? And what was interesting here is that in an analogy to linear programming, we're going to see an interesting difference. Super basic variables exist only if you have a nonlinear problem. Otherwise, as in a linear program, you end up with just basic variables and non-basic variables. We're going to take a closer look at these variables to show how they actually work in the algorithms that we want to deal with. So the next slide, slide five, actually talks about what these problems look like. Up on top, we have two diagrams here, two graphics, that show you what happens in the case of linear programs. The solution is always at a vertex, and so as a result of that, at that vertex we can define non-basic variables, variables set to their bounds, and then we can solve for the basic variables at each vertex. Okay, for the nonlinear problem, which is on the bottom here, we have two graphics, and what I wanted to show you here is that you end up with a minimum here, where you end up with a set of variables here that are, one is, two are basic here. You end up with one non-basic variable here. Now we're including the slack variables. And we have one super basic because it lies along the constraint. Over here, what we end up with is, if we think again about two variables as well as two slack variables, we end up with variables here where you end up with no non-basic variables, none of the vertices are active, or none of the constraints are active, and we have an interior minimum, and that's determined by the two super basic variables. Okay, Let's now take a closer look at how the optimality conditions work. The optimality conditions I'm going to explain somewhat quickly, in that if we have a completely unconstrained problem, we have two variables, and because we're going to find a flat spot and a zero gradient spot, what we're going to find out is that those two variables will define the optimum, and they're going to be super basic, basically because they have a zero gradient. And the optimality conditions can be written in a fairly straightforward way. We simply have a zero gradient condition, stationarity, and we have non-negative curvature in all directions. That's for the necessary conditions. Sufficient conditions basically say we have positive curvature in all directions, and we have a stationary point. Okay, so this is basically the case where we have no constraints. When we add inequality constraints, then what we're going to find out is that if any of these inequality constraints are going to be active, then what's going to happen is we now think about a problem with four variables. These include the slack variables corresponding to two inequality constraints. And what's going to happen here is you can see that I have one variable, the slack variable, that goes to its bound for G1. And I have a super basic variable that is basically finding the optimum along the constraint G1, and the remaining two variables are going to be basic. They're going to be determined by the constraints. Okay, with that case there, we're going to basically find out that we're not at a vertex point, but we're actually going to find a stationary point along the constraint G1. If I walk along that constraint, I will have a stationary point that defines a super basic variable. The next one is where I introduce an equality constraint. And now what we see is that the equality constraint and one of the inequality constraints uses up all of the degrees of freedom. And now what we end up with is no super basic variables. Two of the variables are going to be non-basic, basically defined by the equation and defined by the slack variable and defined by the equation. And then the remaining variables are going to be basic. So the idea there is now we're basically defining something in terms of non-basic and basic variables, and that's going to be our vertex point. Okay, given this information here, let's take a closer look at the KKT conditions. What we have here is basically the following thing. If I think about a ball being on a rail between the fences, one of the things we find out is that the equilibrium point is where the force of gravity for the objective function is now going to be pinned by the rail and the fences. So this is what you can see in slide 8. Okay, and now what we're going to do is we're going to take a closer look at these conditions. The KKT conditions have that balance of forces where we have kind of the gradient of the objective function being balanced by the fences, the inequality constraints, and the equality constraints, which we can think of as rails. And now what we have also is some multipliers. These are the weights for the balancing equation. Because we have inequality constraints, the convention is that the weights can only push in one direction, hence it's non-negative. We have to be feasible. So g of x is less than or equal to 0, h of x is equal to 0, and then we have complementarity. Either we're on the fence or we're not, okay? And so on slide 9, what you see is this complementarity condition where either g of x is 0 and u can be positive, or if g of x is less than 0, strictly less than 0, then u must be equal to 0. Okay, those are the first order conditions. The second order conditions require a little bit more work. First of all, before we go further, we're going to have some kind of constraint qualification. If we have a minimum point, then the necessary conditions for that minimum are satisfied by the first order KKT conditions as long as you satisfy a constraint qualification. One of the most common ones is this linear independence condition that basically says that the constraint gradients for the active inequalities and for the equalities have to be linearly independent. If they do not hold, if the constraint qualification does not hold, there may be an optimum solution that does not satisfy the KKT conditions. All right, the second order conditions are very Well, they are an extension of what happens when we deal with unconstrained problems, namely that along certain constrained directions, P, okay, what we're going to find out is that we expect to have positive curvature, or at least non-negative curvature for the necessary case, in the constrained directions. Now, those constrained directions are defined by the superbasic variables. And what's interesting is if we have a vertex point with no superbasic variables, we have no non-zero constrained directions. Hence, the second-order conditions are vacuously satisfied. If we have the superbasic variables, that basically gives us the directions, the constrained directions along the superbasic variables. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the optimality conditions for a local optimum again, but now what I did was I rewrote it into this other form, where we have, instead of inequality constraints, we have just upper and lower bounds. And we have equations, and so you have again the balance of forces, you have feasibility, and you have complementarity. This is on slide 10. Okay. Now, we talked about partitioning these variables, and so what I wanted to do is partition them into the non-basic, the basic, and the super-basic variables. So we see that here. And what we can do is we can start taking this apart by saying I can define the basic variables by simply looking at that part of the stationarity condition for the basic variables. And if I have the non-basic and super-basic variables fixed, then basically I can solve for the basic variables and the associated multipliers lambda. Okay, so that's a square system in ZB and lambda. Now, if I have the non-basic variables, then essentially those variables are set to their bounds, and what is left is basically the stationarity condition. Since I know lambda, and if I know the solution, then I can solve for the multiplier at the bound directly. So I have a square system for that set of equations. And what's left over are the super-basic variables. Those can be defined simply by looking at the stationarity condition because they are not at bounds. And so I can separate these three classified variables, or separate the conditions for these three classified variables, simply by taking apart the KKT conditions. Now, the question is, if I have this classification, what can I do with each subset, given that the others would be temporarily fixed? And then I could solve square problems for each one of these. Okay, slide 11 is going to talk about each of these cases, and at first I'm going to start with the basic variables. The basic variables say the following. How do I solve for them? Well, there are really two ways. First of all, I can just simply linearize the KKT conditions once I know the non-basic variables, and I can simply solve for all of the other equations. And this is basically done with a full space method. Okay, so I can solve all the variables simultaneously, and in fact the SQP and the barrier methods do that. Okay, and they're essentially applying Newton-type methods to the KKT conditions. The other way to do it is with a reduced space approach. Okay, and here what we would do is simply eliminate the non-linear equations that are given on top and solve for ZB once all the other variables, non-basic and base and super-basic variables, are fixed. This is basically the idea of a feasible path generalized reduced gradient method. The other approach is, rather than doing a non-linear elimination, one can do a linear elimination, linearize the above equations, and then simply eliminate ZB and the multipliers. And this is done, for example, in algorithms such as MINOS and RSQP. So that's slide 11. Slide 12 now talks about the non-basic variables. Well, the non-basic variables are fixed at their bounds. And for this, what one can do is one can either use a barrier approach or an active set approach. Now, the big difference between them is that the barrier approach really doesn't fix the non-basic variables. Okay, what it does instead is it essentially penalizes them so that they don't violate their bounds, and they're forced to their bound by a barrier term in the objective function. This is used in IPOPT, in Nitro, and in LOCO, for example. The active set method comes in two flavors. What we can do is we can either explicitly set the non-basic variables to their bounds, and this is done, for example, in gradient projection methods, or one could let some subproblem determine what the active set is and then determine what the non-basic variables should do. This is done, for example, by QP and LP subproblems that can be used, for example, in the SQP method. Finally, slide 13 now talks about the gradient projection method. Okay, this is something special in terms of determining the active set. What this does is give you some flavor for what happens if I'm interior to the bounds, the box defined by the bounds, and now if we have a search direction, whether it's a Newton step or a steepest descent step, and what we will do is apply a projection. Okay, once we hit the bound, we can still move along the sides of the box given by this projection operator. It's given here. And then what we can do is generate piecewise linear paths called x sub t, where t is the length along the path, and then we start from our reference point, and we can continue by projecting, for example, a steepest descent direction from x0, and that's given by the bottom equation here that applies the projection operator. Okay, this is a way that we can actually now trace the improvement of the objective function while maintaining feasibility and essentially allowing us to choose what the non-basic variables would be along that path. Slide 14 is the last one talking about the variables, and in particular, we're talking about the remaining variables, which are the super basic variables. We know how to deal with the basic variables by doing an elimination. We know how to deal with the non-basic variables by setting them to their bounds. What's left over are those variables that are independent and at the solution of the NLP will be in the interior. So what we have to do there is solve the above condition. And for this, to apply a Newton's method, we will have to find second derivatives or approximate them. So in this case, there's the question. We either approximate them by using something like a quasi-Newton method defined here, for example, with a BFGS formula. And what's nice about this is that that BFGS formula gives us a matrix that is positive definite, and when applied to a Newton-type method, for example, to get the super basic variables in reduced space, this will actually give us something with a unique search direction and descent properties that are useful for the algorithm. The other approach is to apply exact second derivatives. Okay, this really gives us a very fast Newton-type method. On the other hand, the problem is that this may not always be positive definite, and one has to take some precautions in that case. So essentially what we have now is two flavors of these. One is in full space, where one would like to exploit sparsity, as the super basics are now handled with all the other variables, or the reduced space, where we apply a projection only in the space of the super basic variables. In the case of exact second derivatives, this can lead to maybe an expensive Dunn's linear algebra for the projection. On the other hand, we can apply a quasi-Newton formula that will simply just give us this. Am I talking to them? Okay, good. So so that takes care of the super basic variable. Slide 15. Okay, slide 15 now basically classifies different kinds of methods in terms of things that we already talked about, reduced gradient methods with restoration and without, successive quadratic programming, barrier functions, and finally successive linear programming. I'm going to be talking about the top four methods, namely because SLP doesn't handle super basic variables in a systematic way. So it's useful for mostly linear problems where we would expect the solution to be at a vertex point. Okay. If we had non-vertex solutions, then the way SLP handles super basic variables is through a trust region, which can be actually arbitrarily slow to converge. So I'm going to avoid those methods. Okay, so now going to the methods, slide 16 is going to talk about reduced gradient methods. This is simply a way of saying I've I've fixed the non-basic variables. I now have super basic variables that are going to drive the problem, and I'm going to do a nonlinear elimination for the basic variables. In this case, what's going to happen is I'm going to end up being able to write the reduced gradient for the objective function in terms of super basic variables, and then I'm going to use the equation where I simply expand the differential, keep it feasible all the time, and with some linear algebra I can find out how the basic variables are going to change with the super basic variable, plug that back in, and at the last bottom equation I have a definition for the reduced gradient to drive the optimization with the independent or the super basic variables. Slide 17 shows you how this works. It's a small example, and that small example is simply there to show you how that can be calculated. Slide 18 is a sketch of the GRG algorithm. Okay, this simply is a way of thinking about the elimination. So what we're going to do is start off with step one, initialize the problem. Step two, find a feasible point and classify the variables. Step three, fix the non-basic variables. Step four, calculate the reduced gradient. And then step five, search in the space of the super basic variables. Now, once one does that, one can globalize by coming up with a line search for the super basic variables, and then for the basic variables, solving them explicitly through a nonlinear elimination, and continuing until the reduced gradient satisfies some tolerance. Now, along the way, one may have to repartition these variables. This is actually done with a heuristic, but if one cannot satisfy this, and that basically complicates the algorithm. But nevertheless, this is how it would work once you have the partition for the super basic, non-basic, and basic variables. Slide 19 gives you some properties here. Talks about the different algorithms that are available, GRG2 and CONOPT, where they're available and where they're implemented. There's a local feature to CONOPT that gives it faster convergence that uses second derivatives. Otherwise, all of these algorithms use quasi-Newton methods in the space of the super basic variables. The expensive part of these algorithms is that you're always trying to stay feasible. You're always converging the equations to get the basic variables and eliminate them. And so this is one of the things that makes it expensive. The other thing is that these are complicated algorithms. And so because they have a lot of tricks in them, there really is no global convergence proof that incorporates all of these tricks. Okay, so that's slide 19. Slide 20 is a variation on this theme. What slide 20 does is essentially give you a motivation for accelerating this by linearizing the equality constraints and then applying a strategy where we still partition the variables into the three types, but now we solve a subproblem with a nonlinear objective function, and then once we get the subproblem, we go ahead, relinearize, and do this again. Some very nice things about MINOS is that now you're not doing a nonlinear elimination, but a linear elimination for the basic variables. But on the other hand, you can not show global convergence proof. Okay, and this is one of the downsides, especially if the problem is very nonlinear. One nice thing about it, though, is that the rate of convergence, if you're close enough to the solution, is at a quadratic rate, and this makes MINOS potentially more efficient than GRG. Okay, that's slide 21. Slide 22 takes us to another set of methods, the SQP methods. And in this case, what we're basically doing is applying the Newton's method to the KKT conditions. What you have on slide 22 is the Newton step applied to the KKT conditions if you know which variables are non-basic. Well, if you know which variables are non-basic, so you know the active set. If you know that, then you can simply take the KKT conditions as a set of equations and apply Newton's method to solve this problem. Now, we don't know what the non-basic variables are, and so this is basically where we have to worry about it. To start this problem, we also need to think about where we get the second derivatives, and we also need good estimates of the multipliers. So that's slide 22. Slide 23 shows you how this method has evolved. Back in 1963, The idea of getting the non-basic variables was to expand the Newton step so that you have a quadratic programming problem. And this quadratic programming problem determines the non-basic variables, gives you a search direction, and that can be interpreted as the Newton step. Now, back in 1963, there were really no good methods for globalization, and also this is the exact second derivatives not only had to be calculated, but they may not guarantee the right curvature properties. So somewhat later, in the mid-70s, Hahn and Powell independently discovered that you could come up with quasi-Newton methods for the second derivative matrix. This leads to a very nice result that you can get a unique search direction and a well-posed QP subproblem. You can also force global convergence by using a line search that can allow you to converge to a local solution from poor starting points. Okay. These are actually good methods because they require few function values for convergence. Slide 24 talks a little bit about the elements of the SQP method. You obtain search directions by getting solving a quadratic subproblem. You globalize the method by making sure that some combination of the objective function and the equality constraints, or all of the constraints, is minimized. And there are two merit functions here that will do that for you along the line search. Okay, once you do this, you can actually say on slide 25 that we have fast convergence properties and we can enforce global convergence. And on slide 26, I have the sketch of the basic SQP algorithm. That basic algorithm looks a lot like Newton's method, where step 3 determines the Newton step, step 4 determines the line search, and then the iteration proceeds by taking a line search step and then going back to step 2, updating the gradients, and then continuing with the update of the Hessian as well. Slide 27 is an expansion into large-scale SQP. What we're doing here is we're basically now thinking about projections or full-space sparsity. So you have the choice of an active set strategy where you come up with a way to identify the non-basic variables. And then what's left over is either a lot of super basic variables or a few super basic variables. So here you have the choice. If you have a lot of super basic variables, you're better off with a full-space method. If you have a few super basic variables, you can apply a reduced space elimination of the basic variables. For a few degrees of freedom, what I have shown here is basically taking advantage of sparsity of the constraint Jacobian, projecting the second derivative matrix here called W of the Lagrange function into that space, the null space of the Jacobian for the constraints. Or what one can do is simply calculate those projected second derivatives using the BFGS formula. This is easy to implement. It exploits a natural assignment of the dependent and decision variables, i.e. the basic and super basic variables, and it doesn't require second derivatives. The downside is that this becomes expensive if you have many degrees of freedom or if you have many bounds in the QP. Slide 29 shows you the projection on how that's done. We now have eliminated the non-basics. We have only the basics and the super basics. And now what we're going to do is we're going to deal with two directions, dy, that deals with the basic variables, dz, which deals with the super basic variables. And now what we're going to do is define a null space representation, the null space of A transpose. And once we have that, we choose another matrix that fills up the remaining space, y. And so the combined matrices Y and Z are square and non-singular. Once you apply some linear algebra to the Newton step, you get the equation on the bottom of slide 29. And after multiplying things out on slide 30, you end up with a nice reverse triangular system. The bottom row here now allows you to solve directly for dy, the basic step. The second row now allows you to solve directly for dz, the super basic step. And the top row then allows you to solve directly for the multipliers lambda plus. Okay, so that's basically what you find out in the steps that are given here. You assemble them and you get the total step comprised of the basic variables and the super basic variables. Okay, that's the active set strategy. Now on slide 31, what we have is we have a different way of dealing with it. Now all the variables are combined into one. And we're going to talk about barrier methods where we simply apply a Newton-type method for all of these. First thing we do is we take all of the inequality constraints, and here I've simplified it on slide 31 to deal with only non-negativity bounds, simply because this is easier to derive. We throw those bounds up into the objective function as a barrier term, and what one can show, and this is an old result going back to the late 50s, is that as mu goes to zero, the solution of the barrier problem on the bottom becomes the solution of the original problem on the top. Fiacco McCormick did a lot of analysis in their book in 1968 to show this, and so the idea would be to solve a sequence of barrier problems on the bottom to get to the solution. Slide 32 shows a primal dual approach on how to do this. Okay, so what we do is we write the optimality conditions for the barrier problem, but now we replace the barrier term with a variable nu, and now we rewrite that barrier term, or rewrite the definition of the variable nu, in terms of this matrix X, which has the values of vector X on the diagonal, and the barrier parameter mu, which is expected to go to zero. Now notice this looks a lot like the other KKT conditions, where when mu goes to zero, you end up with the second equation becoming complementarity, the first equation becoming the stationarity of the Lagrange function, and of course the last one simply being feasibility of the equality constraints. That's our Newton step, and when we take that Newton step with Newton's method, we end up with this system here. V and X are both diagonal matrices, okay? And so we can eliminate the search direction dv simply by eliminating those and coming up with another system on slide 32 that looks a lot like the KKT system that we had before. We can work with this directly. The only difference is now we have a barrier term that is added to w, and that barrier term sigma is going to adapt itself as mu goes to zero. Okay, that's slide 32. This is embedded in the IPOPT code. And now a couple things we can say. Globalization of SQP and barrier solvers is done in the same way. We choose a merit function, and we do a line search along that search direction and update the multipliers in the same way. One of the things to worry about is that, in fact, unlike SQP methods, this approach is not necessarily going to converge and guarantee global convergence. Because of that, an alternative approach is shown on slide 34, where we actually use the line search filter method. I don't want to go into details except to show you that there are several steps involved given by these colors. So essentially what you do is you'd make sure that you're either to the left or below the dotted staircase, and once you do this, you can show that either phi of x or theta of x, the feasibility, improves, and basically with that, you can show convergence, both global and superlinear convergence for this method. This actually gets around some of the problems with actually doing a line search with a merit function, and this allows us to prove convergence. Slide 35 shows you one of the algorithms that was implemented this way. This is IPOPT. It's freely available, has some nice convergence properties, and has actually been applied to thousands of test problems. The alternative to this is a barrier method called NITRO. And what this does is also take Newton steps. And the way it does this is by globalizing using a trust region method. Now, the trust region method is a bit complicated. But what we're actually doing is we're trying to reduce a merit function, in this case the exact penalty function, by taking two steps. One is taking a step for the basic variables, which is called the normal subproblem or the quasi-normal subproblem. And the other is taking a step for the super basic variables, which is called a tangential subproblem. In slide 36, we see how these equations work for both of these. And of course, we're going to restrict the size of the step by having a trust region either for the normal subproblem or for the tangential subproblem. Now, as we deal with this, what we're going to find out on the next slide, slide 37, is that we're actually going to develop two search directions and two trust regions. First, we're going to end up with the normal step, essentially dealing with the basic variables, and with a tangential step. And this is going to deal with the super basic variables, and because we have a barrier method, it also deals with the non-basic variables. So that's basically how the globalization works for something like Nitro. Now, Nitro actually does both a line search and a trust region, and slide 38 describes this a little bit more. It applies a trust region method mainly when it gets into trouble, okay, when the line search itself doesn't work very well, and there are some techniques to actually find out when that happens. It works well with an exact Hessian, okay, and the normal problem is a fairly simple problem to solve for the trust region step. The tangential problem is solved in the space of the non-basic and super-basic variables with the rest of these problems. A couple of things on the availability are also given on slide 38, as well as the convergence properties. Slide 39 is getting toward the end here, where I want to give you a comparison of all of these methods. So what we have here is we summarize with SQP steps, reduced SQP methods, gradient projection with elimination, gradient projection with linear elimination. And you can see this is in some common codes that are given on this slide, ranging from NP-SOL, the Harwell code VF02AD, FMINCON, which is in MATLAB for SQP methods, reduced SQP. We have some codes given here, ranging from SNOPT being the most popular one. The gradient projection, these are all reduced gradient methods, and I've given you the list here, especially CONOPT and GAMS and AMPL and AIMS, GRG2, which is basically embodied in the Excel solver, and then MINOS, which has also been widely used and probably one of the older ones. The barrier methods, there are three of them, IPOPT, Nitro, and LOCO, and finally there are some interesting hybrids, in particular FSQP combines SQP and nonlinear elimination. Lancelot actually uses an augmented Lagrangian type method that puts in the inequalities and then does a full space minimization using gradient projection. Slide 40 now is kind of a very quick and dirty comparison on a data reconciliation problem. What you see is the problem itself, essentially some bilinear constraints, quadratic objective function, and now what you're going to see here is a comparison of several of the algorithms on slide 39. Slide 40 shows you that for two of the algorithms, the number of iterations is going to increase with the number of super basic variables. The number of variables, total variables, is about 10 times the number of super basics. And what we see here is that MINOS and SNOPT have a linear increase in the number of iterations, whereas the other algorithms basically have a constant number of iterations as the number of super basic increases. This is due to the fact that all of the other algorithms have exact second derivatives, while SNOPT and MINOS are using quasi-Newton updates for that, and that's basically why they have more iterations. The bottom graphic on slide 40 shows you what happens if you have the CPU time comparison, note the log scale, and what we found out was that in fact Nitro and IPOPT actually seem to perform the best on this comparison here. Now, this was done several years ago in 2004. What I should show you is a more recent comparison that was done independently in slide 41. There's a study done by Hans Mittelmann that was done last October. And in fact, this study here dealt only with large-scale problems. Okay, and what was compared here were several algorithms. I've chosen the five that we've talked about already. And what I wanted to show you is where the failures occurred, the limits in terms of either memory or computer time. This was run for under two hours of CPU time. This was done on a PC, I think probably a 3 gigahertz PC at this point, Pentium 4. What you see is that the limits occurred, there were 7 failures due to limits in CPU time or memory by IPOpt and Nitro. The other algorithms, Loco, SNOpt, and ConOpt, had considerably more failures due to limiting factors. The actual failures, not due to limits, are shown here for IPOpt, only 2, Nitro had none, Loco had 4, and both SNOpt and ConOpt had 11. Of those that actually worked, what you see is the following for the 117 test problems. This is a Dolan-Moray plot that shows you the fraction of problems solved the best within a multiplier of the minimum time. This is given, the x-axis actually is in log base 2. So we start actually with 0 being 1, 2 being 4, 4 being 16, and so forth. And what you see here is that among the fastest and more robust algorithms is Nitro, followed by IPOpt, okay? And those seem to be the leaders. The others are considerably slower. Loco is in the middle, and then both SNOpt and ConOpt actually kind of bring up the rear as the slowest algorithms. So this gives you some idea of how these perform, especially on problems that are large scale and can have many super basic variables as well. So slide 42 gives you a summary of this. What you find out is that there are widely used algorithms that are solving nonlinear problems with thousands of variables and super basics routinely. They exploit sparsity in structure, and they lead to solving problems if we can exploit the right structure with even millions of variables and even many super basics along those lines. Availability of structure and second derivatives is the key to fast performance because these are all essentially Newton-type solvers. Global and fast local convergence properties are well known for many, but not all of these algorithms, and the exceptions on knowing these convergence properties are basically here with Loco, Minos, ConOpt, GRG. These are also fast algorithms, but they are also embody some heuristics which are difficult to analyze. So that's basically where I'd like to conclude. Slide 43 talks about some current challenges, especially when we deal with larger problems in parallel. We also deal with problems that don't necessarily satisfy constraint qualifications, for example, singular problems or problems that have math programming with equilibrium constraints, complementarity constraints. There's also an issue of extracting accurate first and second derivatives from models that are actually black box codes. And finally, we would like to notice that these NLP solvers are the workhorse behind mixed integer nonlinear programming and global solvers, where they're used for different purposes. And one of the challenges is actually to quickly detect infeasible subproblems in these subregions where you don't want to deal with them. And that's where I'll stop. Thank you.